Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. They are perhaps the most mind-blowing phenomena in the universe. Albert Einstein couldn't accept their existence, and it's possible that we might not exist without them. A powerful two-hour Nova special explores the black hole apocalypse. You can see it tonight on SDPB-TV at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. Joining us now is the show's host. Jan Levin is an astrophysicist at Columbia University. She was recently named a Guggenheim Fellow. Her most recent book is called Black Hole Blues and Other Songs from Outer Space. She joins us on the phone now from Brooklyn, New York. Dr. Levin, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Let's start with this sort of magnificent story of the chirp and the LIGO, the black holes colliding. Set the stage for this moment, in this particular moment in history, really.
Yeah, it's really quite incredible that LIGO started as kind of one guy's small-scale dream in a ramshackle lab on the periphery of the MIT campus in the 1970s. And now is a billion-dollar second-generation experiment of two enormous instruments, each one spanning 4 kilometers, one on the coast of Louisiana and one in Washington State. And LIGO is, I kind of liken it to an electric guitar. It's kind of a musical instrument. It's not taking a picture. It's actually recording a sound. The way an electric guitar records a ringing string, LIGO records the ringing of space-time itself. And in this case, the first discovery ever made, which was in 2015, was of the collision of two black holes 1.3 billion years ago that rang space-time banging. The metals were banging like mallets on the drum of space-time itself, and created these waves that 1.3 billion years later struck these instruments. It's really quite extraordinary.
All right. So if you're listening now, I was able to watch most of the Black Hole Apocalypse last night. And if you're not all in with the ringing of space-time itself, I can't help you, because it's such a cool setup.
The show, yeah,
it right,
opens
yeah,
and closes the show, yeah. But the show goes into all of the different kinds of black holes that we can see with telescopes, as well, right. and kind of ends with the this incredible discovery by LIGO, which earned them the Nobel Prize this year.
Right. So, what exactly is a black hole?
What exactly is it?
For our understandings in this conversation, what are we talking about?
So a black hole is, a lot of people think of a black hole as a thing, like a dense crush of matter, as though if you went up to the black hole, you would find this dense material. It's actually not that. Black hole is more like a place, and there's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing at the surface of the black hole. If you were to fall across a black hole, it would be empty space. And that really stuns people. What a black hole really is, it's a region of space-time that's so strongly curved that not even light can escape. That region we call the extent of the event horizon. And if you approach the event horizon, you and everything else, including the light reflected off of your face, will spill into the black hole forever, like a one-way passage, never to come out again. And that's really all we mean by the black hole. We mean an empty shadow. To cross over into the black hole would kind of be like stepping into the shadow of a tree. Think about that for a while.
I know. Everything is sort of mind-blowing, and you almost have to pause at every... Even the scientists...
Yeah, a moment of silence, please.
Yeah, a moment of silence for science, please. Every scientist in this program as well, and you have many, have that same moment where they just say, this is unexpected, or this is not how nature behaves, or this blows my mind, or things like that. So everybody is sort of standing in awe of what we're learning.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I think science is so exciting, because nature is stranger than any fiction we can make up. And it's shareable. It's true for all of us. You know, when Einstein talked about curved space-time, he taught it to the world. Nobody is laboring over, what did Einstein mean? What did he mean? We all know exactly what he meant, because he gave us a usable tool. And once you master the tool, it's yours to use. And that's spectacular. And it's true for, somebody, Ramanujan in India, and it's true for Newton in England, and it's true for us today. And that makes it kind of exciting to remember that we're all under the same sky.
Let's bring back Einstein into the story, because this is largely also the story of people and our relationships with each other and with the things that we don't know and the things that we want to know. And go back to, his theory of relativity, and then this scientist, is it Schwarzschild?
Yes.
The World War II, yeah. So tell us that
World
connection.
World War One. It's amazing. One.
Thank you. Yeah.
World War One. So it was really early. It was 1916. Einstein had just published his general theory of relativity, which is the theory of curved space-time, the idea that when we orbit the sun, what we're really doing is falling along a natural curve carved in the space by the mass of the sun. It's an extraordinarily beautiful idea. And Schwarzschild, while calculating ballistic trajectories on the Russian front, read this and in a very short time produced a mathematical model of an extreme scenario. He didn't presume to know how you would set up this scenario, but just the extreme scenario of taking, let's say, the entire mass of the sun crushed down to a point, literally a point. And he said, let's just pretend this could happen. Einstein was very impressed with the mathematical solution. It had the event horizon, this shadow, this empty space, this extreme curvature. But Einstein thought, and, reasonably, how in the world would you crush the mass of the sun down to a point? It can't be possible. So he thought nature wouldn't allow it to happen. He thought it was a great mathematical solution, but there's no mechanism to make such a thing in reality. That's what he believed. And quite spectacularly, nature figured out a way to make black holes.
How do scientists study this thing that you can't see it? You're alluding to the math, but is this all about mathematic equations?
It's not. And we talk about various scientists historically in the film who looked at the math, but also thought to themselves, well, how would that appear in the sky? I mean, let's say there's a black hole and it's 15 times the mass of the sun and it's 6,000 light years away. What would that look like? And what some interesting observers realized, go to telescopes and take data and take pictures, they realized that if that black hole had a companion star that orbited it, what you would see is you would see this other star wobble. It's kind of like looking at the moon and noticing that it's moving. And so they would look at another star and say, hey, that star is moving around something, but I don't see anything there. Maybe it's a black hole. And so they would deduce how big and how massive the object was at the center of that motion, and you could extrapolate that it must be a black hole.
I want to digress for a moment because one of the things I couldn't help but notice during this production of Black Hill Apocalypse was how many female scientists were part of, not only major discoveries, but part of the program itself. And obviously, your background is, if you read your bio, you can actually go find her at, is it janelevin.com?
Sure. Yep.
I'll put a link up on that
there
website.
And
right there you are. And why is that important for these women to sort of be featured? And what's the role of women scientists in the story of black hole discovery?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of that is really driven by NOVA and driven by the producers and the directors. And it's not really my call which scientists get interviewed. And I noticed that there were a lot of women in the film myself. And if you look, you see that they're fairly young women. So it's not a distribution of the older generation, although there are people like Louise Webster who are mentioned who have passed away, who were part of the very original discoveries when women were a much lower demographic in the field of astrophysics. And so, I don't particularly like to talk about gender issues. And in fact, one of the ironies was that I was pushing to have a lot of men in the film.
Interesting.
And it was something that we joked about. But the women that are represented are just top flight scientists. They're all charming on camera. They were just wonderful. And that's just how it happened. I mean, if I had produced a film, I did not produce this film. I'm hosting if I didn't produce it. But if someone produced a film and the ratio was the other way around, we wouldn't be having the conversation, why are there so many men in this field? And what is, how does being a man affect them being in the field? They're almost impossible to answer questions. I would say that the producers went out, they picked their favorite interviews with the people they felt were strongest on camera who had this strong history in recent black hole science.
We might be saying, where are the women if the ratio is reversed?
Maybe we shouldn't be having it at all,
right?
Yeah, because isn't it kind of beautiful if that's just how it is and we'd stop noticing? That would be wonderful. That would really be wonderful.
I'm still noticing. I got to tell you, I'm still noticing.
As is everybody else, trust me.
Let's jump ahead to the 1930s. You mentioned Louise Webster and then Paul Merton.
Merton.
Is that his name? Merton.
Yeah.
And this is really not only just can there be black holes, it's a specific black hole.
Mm-hmm. So this was an object called, or still is, Cygnus X1. It's named Cygnus X1 because it's in the direction of the constellation Cygnus, which is the swan, and the X stands for X-rays. And there was a strong X-ray source coming from this system in the direction of Cygnus. And what Louise Webster and Paul Merton did was to ask if they could see exactly this motion we were just discussing. Is it possible that the X-rays were coming from a companion to a black hole? And that the idea is that if you look for motion of the companion, which is bright and luminous, you could see that even if you couldn't see the black hole, even if the black hole was dark. And the X-rays are because material is being plucked off this companion star, kind of like cotton candy being pulled off of the atmosphere, and it splatters onto the black hole, creating these bright X-rays. And so they went out to measure the motion of the star, and they came back with a number for the mass of the object it was orbiting that very much suggested it was a black hole. So that was the first one that was observed and conclusively by humans, the one that the scientific community most widely accepted as the first evidence for a real black hole.
How many are there? Is there any way to say, was there a point
yeah,
where people
we can
are
estimate.
Saying, like, how common is this? Yeah.
It's incredibly common. It's surprisingly common. So our Milky Way galaxy, where we live, that beautiful spiral image people often see, you know, that milky riff of stars you can see if you're in a dark part of the Earth, that galaxy has 100 billion stars, roughly, a few hundred billion stars, and about 1% become black holes. That means a billion black holes in our own galaxy. And there are 100 billion galaxies in the universe. So that's a lot of black holes. Now, also, there are supermassive black holes, which are absolutely colossal in the centers of galaxies. We think every galaxy. There's a black hole 4 million times the mass of our sun, 26,000 light years away in the center of our own Milky Way, anchoring it, kind of the core of the galactic center. And we think that is very common, that most, if not all, galaxies have them.
How is that location significant to us?
Well, to us, we're pretty safely far away. I would definitely be more concerned about, like, climate change.
No, I mean...
we will fall into that black hole eventually.
No, what I mean is just the notion that it's at the center of the galaxy. Does that tell us something about the galaxy itself is what I'm getting at?
Sure, it does. We think that the supermassive black holes actually sculpt galaxies, that they modulate and control the formation of galaxies themselves, so that they're at the center because they're the densest part of the core, and that's the only place that they can form to be supermassive black holes. And from that vantage point, they continue to shape the size and structure of the galaxy in which they reside. So black holes, as my friend Priya says in the film, may be the key players in the universe.
How did you get interested in this, and what work are you doing, in researching black holes and their effects?
Yeah, so I was not the kind of kid who thought I'd become a scientist. In retrospect, so I loved astronomy. I really did, and I loved looking at the stars and thinking about all these things. I honestly didn't know that was something somebody could commit their life to. And I kind of came across it halfway through college, much later, when I realized, oh, this is something a person can do. You can become a research scientist. You can commit yourself to unsolved problems. And scientists aren't reciting the answers. It's really about discovering good questions to unsolved problems and pursuing them. And that's the fun part. The fun part is not knowing the answer. So I work a lot on things related to LIGO, black hole collisions, and the sounds that they make, and black holes eating neutron stars, and electromagnetic charge phenomena in the universe, these giant electromagnetic circuits. So the hardest part is thinking up a good question.
What are the next big questions? What do you wonder about now? What keeps you up at night?
Well, I think that... the big questions are going to be, in fact, around black holes, but in a different way. So we've been talking about real black holes in astrophysics, in space, in the universe that are formed. But theoretically, when we think about black holes, there's a sense in which they're this beautiful terrain where we can study the most complex laws of physics. And we don't really have another space to explore something so extreme except the black hole. And so in pen and paper, many scientists around the world are trying to understand the clues black holes give us about the fundamental laws of nature. And that, I think, is the most exciting frontier.
The program is called Black Hole Apocalypse. It's a two-hour NOVA special. It's tonight on SDPB-TV, 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. Dr. Jenna Levin, astrophysicist, she hosts the show. Her latest book, most recent book, is called Black Hole Blues and Other Songs from Outer Space. You wrote a novel as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, my second book was a novel. It was about mathematicians, so still close to conceptual subjects, but it wasn't a novel.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for being
here. Oh, thank you so much for having me on. Lovely to talk to you.